Today on Wings.
In every situation, there is resistance, there is opposition, and there are possibilities to act, knowing that the winner does not take it all if we don't let him take it all.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Women Deliver was a massive conference held in Vancouver, Canada in June of 2019. One of its best attended panels was titled Pushing Back Against the Pushback, The Power of Women's Organizations to Resist Resurgent National Authoritarianism. The lead speaker on that panel was Jacqueline Pitangui from Brazil, one of the women's movement figures who had worked tirelessly to overcome the country's 25-year dictatorship and put women's rights into the Constitution. Now she was seeing a massive right-wing backlash in her country. I'm Frida Worden, the co-founder of Wings. I remembered Jacqueline Pitangui from the 1980s, when she reported for us from Brazil. She was good enough to give me an interview, so you'll hear excerpts from my interview as well as excerpts from the panel in this program.
I'm from a generation of hope. My generation had many things accomplished. In Brazil particularly, we started on military dictatorship. We struggled for democracy. We achieved democracy. We achieved putting women's issues, gender issues at the center of democracy. And all of a sudden, you start to see that what you fought for a lifetime, 30 years, 35 years, it's being demolished in such a speed that first you have to find yourself time to understand what's going on, to deal with the pain, and at the same time to build strategies to defend. So it's simultaneously, you know, almost no time to breathe, because we have to be overcoming the pain all the time. Because if you fell into pain or victimization, you don't act. And my generation, all the women that were activists during the very hard times of dictatorship, we learned something. And we have to transmit this to the new generation, a generation that was born in democracy, that takes for granted a lot of the things that they have. And when you take for granted rights, it's as though they are there and they'll remain. And now they are seeing that these things are disappearing. And there is a feminist spring with young women, which is wonderful. The feminist movement is very diverse. But they do need to have a more interlocution and dialogue with us in order to understand that there is the manifestation, the going to the streets, but there's the process, the backstage process, the advocacy work. Sometimes they want immediate results. You know? So this is something that is a challenge for us, you know.
Jacqueline Pitangui. Carmen Barroso, another Brazilian feminist in her 70s, moderated the Pushing Back Against the Pushback panel.
We here in this room today are extremely lucky. We are here today because of the gains of the movement that have changed the world and scared the opposition. And the backlash of the pushback is the result of the big victories we had in the past. So we are lucky. But the hard truth is that we too are scared. There are good reasons to be alarmed, because all the gains can be eroded, and there is still a long way to go to establish gender equality. And even in the plenary yesterday, there was a mention of how dangerous is this moment, not only gender equality, but human rights in general, democracy itself, and the future of the planet are under threat. much of the ultra-right activity around the world is inspired or receiving direct support from U.S. sources. In the U.S. itself, concerted attacks are eroding the gains in several states. So we are very lucky in the resistance generated in the recent U.S. elections for the Congress. The new wave of women, young people, immigrants were elected. So if we don't act, authoritarian governments will continue to be elected by frustrated voters left behind in the new globalized economy. If we don't act, these governments, authoritarian governments who are already elected, will continue to have free rein to dismantle all the policies that make progress possible. But the best gains should inspire us to go further. So, Jacqueline Pitangui, we are privileged today to hear your lessons from your experience as a major leader of the women's movement in Brazil, who has always positioned gender equality as linked to the broader struggle for democracy, first against the military dictatorship, and later in your own role in the democratic government as a member of the cabinet, where you built all kinds of alliances to promote women's rights. So in 3 minutes only, tell us the main lesson to push back the pushback. Jacqueline, you're the first one.
Well, I'm very glad to have the opportunity to discuss what's happening in the world and particularly what's happening in my country. I think it's key that we build an international solidarity in face of the danger we're facing. Carmen, your question makes me think that we do need to have in mind a few key issues. One is political timing. It is very important to understand that political timing goes very fast, particularly in the beginning of authoritarian regimes, and that we have to act very quickly. Second, it's act strategically. Act strategically both to prevent further pushbacks, but to defend what is in place, and there is a lot in place in Brazil and in many other countries, and even to dare to advance. I think that it is very important also on the 80s, those who were alive on the 80s, there was a song saying, the winner takes it all. The winner takes it all. He doesn't. The winner does not take it all. In every situation, there is resistance, there is opposition, and there are possibilities to act, knowing that the winner does not take it all if we don't let him take it all. If we admit that there's nothing to be done and got into a desperate state, emotionally desperate, we just get paralyzed, and we shouldn't do that because we have a lot to work with the formal democratic institutions still in place, the judiciary, the security system, the health system, educational system, legislative. There are avenues that were open and that are still there that we have to interact, we have to map the allies we have inside the institutions, we have to gain new allies inside the institutions in order to defend the public policies that are there and even, as I said, to dare to advance. Two concrete examples. Just last week in Brazil, the Supreme Court has ruled that it is a crime, discrimination against LGBT. He has ruled this, the court has ruled this in an ambience of deep homophobia because our president is homophobic. Second, and I have only 30 seconds, so second, my organization, SEPIA, it's an NGO based in Rio, and before this disaster of the election, we were working with public schools and addressing youth from vulnerable social areas, bringing to them issues on gender equality, on sexual and reproductive health, violence, and we keep on with these programs because we have a support from inside this system. So I'm just finishing saying, don't give up.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline.
Jacqueline Pitanguy was the only member of the Pushing Back Against the Pushback panel who kept to her allotted 3 minutes' time. As she mentioned the Supreme Court of Brazil, let's note that 5 months later, in November 2019, it freed former Workers' Party President Lula from prison, at least until his appeals on corruption charges were exhausted. In our interview, Pitanguy told me about Lula's arrest and the impeachment of his successor, the first woman president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff.
It's a long... Maybe I don't have all the elements. You know, I'm a feminist and an activist. I am not someone on a political party. But Lula governed for two periods, and his government was excellent in terms of, for the first time, Brazil had really a very important income distribution. All the measures of the Gini index of inequality in Brazil were very favorable. He had 70 million families out of the extreme poverty and a very important increase on low middle class. And at the same time, the rich were very rich. I mean, economically was very successful. In terms of foreign policy, was also very interesting program. And for women, in his government, a new women's ministry or whatever you call, was able to work and develop public policies with a lot of popular participation, etc., etc. So Lula goes out of the government. He was 4 years, then he was reelected more 4 years, then he had to go. But he went out with more than 80% approval, which is historical. When he finished his second term, or when he was on his second term about to finish, started some processes on corruption, which means political parties were asking big enterprises to give a fee in order to get a build a bridge. I don't know. Okay, the bridge costs 10, but then you're going to give 11 because one is for the political party. So this has happened involving not only Lula's party but all of them getting money, not declaring and using it on the political campaigns. So when Dilma comes, already the PT is not as idealistic seen by the population as it was. Her first government went okay. Her second government, where she was reelected but a very small margin, didn't go well at all. She had problems in the economy, specifically, you know. Some people say it's the economy, stupid, you know, when the economy doesn't work. So she had problems with the economy, plus all these issues of corruption, not involving her personally. She's an absolutely honest woman. They tried and tried. There's nothing against her. And Dilma was not a politician. She was a technician. She worked before in the Ministry of Energy and Mining. She was not someone from the political milieu, you know. She didn't know how to do politics. So there was what they call impeachment, but I call a coup d'etat to take her away. And the vice president came in.
He was from a different party.
He was from a different party. It was a coalition. He was from the PMDB. But he was a man that was all his life in the parliament. He was a politician. And Dilma was someone out of place. She was out of place there. I was very sorry when this happened. Very deceived, disappointed, and angry. But it went on. They call an institutional coup because it had the support of the institutions. Dilma today is not an important figure in our political scenario. Lula is still a very important figure. That's why he's in prison. And it's interesting because not money for his pocket, there is no proof at all. You know? He doesn't have anything in his pocket. So it's a very strange judiciary. I'm not a lawyer, but I really have difficulty to understand. He is being judged because he would have received an apartment that he didn't receive, that he doesn't own. And it's a modest apartment. I mean, it's very modest everything. But he's kept in prison because he is really an opponent. Before he went to prison, they made all these surveys before the elections to know who would be the candidate, and he was winning, you know, in popular vote.
So was he not allowed to stand for the election?
No, he was not allowed. They find a way to put him in prison before he could stand for the election, because he was then the favorite. He would have won. Mm. And meanwhile, what Bolsonaro did was to build his campaign on hate. And what surprises me is that there was so much hate you didn't know about in society, you know. And he worked very well, the hate for the PT, the hate for Lula, the hate for corruption, while his family is very corrupt. And also he had the support of the evangelical, neo-Pentecostal churches on all the issues that have to do with moral and customs that are central to his agenda, thus sexuality, gender identity. I mean, this is central. So I don't know here, but in Brazil, usually the pastor, the preacher in these churches, he decides whom they should vote for, and he orients the voting, you know. So our church is voting for such and such, and people go there and vote. Mm-hmm.
So this hate, do you have a sense where it actually came from or resided? I mean, was it just manufactured by media, or, I mean, how did it come back?
This is $1 million question, and that's something, you know, that we have to study. And then I make a mea culpa, because I think that I don't mean we only, the feminists, I mean we, the progressive sectors, we didn't perceive the monster that was coming. We didn't study enough what was the feeling in society that was rejecting the government for moral and customs, I mean, in terms of sexuality, in terms of abortion, in terms of same-sex union, diversity, racism. We didn't perceive that there was such an opposition for that, and that this opposition was being recreated by all those churches all the time. This is one thing we didn't give enough weight to the power. It's not only hate, I think it's fear too. People fear the unknown. They fear what they don't really understand. They fear what is different from those beliefs they were raised on. They have a sense of insecurity with diversity. They have a sense of insecurity with feminism, with insecurity. And the propaganda of the government of Bolsonaro worked very well with fear. He created fear. He even created a fear that Brazil was going to become a Venezuela if he was not elected, which has nothing to do, because we still have democratic institutions in place. We'll never become a Venezuela, I hope so. But he worked this way also, fear. Fear of the other, fear of the unknown, fear. And I cannot answer your million-dollar questions because there are too many variables, you know.
So tell me just a little bit about your organization then and what you're going to do.
Well, my organization, SEPIA, Citizenship Studies Information Action, is there for almost 30 years, which is a long time for an NGO. We have been working in different political contexts. We have on our agenda violence against women and access to justice, which means we work a lot with security and justice system. We were directly involved in the Maria da Penha law, which is the new domestic violence legislation in Brazil, with the feminicide law. We monitor the application of the legislation. We do a lot of capacity building research on these areas, also sexual and reproductive health and rights. We address the Supreme Court with amicus curis actions for the right of abortion. We are part of a situation room of UNFPA in relation to the Zika virus and abortion and reproductive rights. But we also have a program that I mentioned that we are doing in public schools for very vulnerable persons, that we deal with human rights, sexual and reproductive health and rights, gender equality, etc. And so this leads me immediately to our other program, which is youth program. We believe very much that it's very important to work with youth to sustain to bring new perspectives. It is a counterpoint to all this massacre coming from the churches and everything.
For Jacqueline, I have a specific question about funders who were important allies in supporting women's rights in the past. And Jacqueline herself was an advisor to one of the major funders some time ago. But now international funders are focusing mostly on low-income countries with very dire consequences for organizations without other sources of support. What should funders do to make their past investment sustainable?
Well, this is a very good question, Carmen, because it points out to something that really worries me, which is a lack of longer-term perspective in the part of funders. So what happened in Brazil? We had in the 90s, for instance, the era of the conferences, the presence of funders, very important funders in the place, and they were very, very important to advances. But if funders talk about sustainability a lot, they didn't perceive that if they leave a country because there was success, there's no sustainability. I mean, think of a cathedral, Notre Dame, went in fire, what, a couple of hours? Well, human rights are social constructions. They are not dogmas. They are not written in sacred books. They are written with the everyday struggle between those who oppose and those who propose laws, public policies. So it's a daily struggle, and this construction can be destroyed. It's happening in Brazil on a very quick pace, on a very quick pace. And donors left the country. They left the country, or those who stayed said, oh, women's issues, women's affairs are not part of our portfolio anymore. It's not really important. They have achieved so much. And what we see now is that at the same time that women have been in many of the countries mentioned here, and certainly Brazil, the main actors in defending human rights, in defending gender equality, and even the concept of gender, as was mentioned here, that is considered now a prohibited word, they have no funds. We have no funds. We have very few organizations that are still there. And how do you operate? How do you build strategies? How do you become an actor when there is so much sources and resources on the other side? So I think that we do have to bring this message to the funders. If sustainability is a value for you, you're not smart in, you know, putting all your investment in danger because you just left and went somewhere else, leaving the NGOs, the human rights activists, without resources to defend what was gained with the support of the funders.
Jacqueline Pitangui, speaking at the Women Deliver Conference in June 2019 on a panel titled Pushing Back Against the Pushback, The Power of Women's Organizations to Resist National Authoritarianism. The panel's moderator is Carmen Barroso, retired Western Hemisphere Director of the International Planned Parenthood Foundation. Barroso takes one final question from the audience.
I will recognize a man here that is an ally.
Here's the microphone.
That's okay, I'm not a man, but that's all right. I get mistaken all the time. I wanted to go on.
I'm sorry.
No problem. I wanted to ask about maybe to talk more about the coalition building and alliances, and what is that common thing that you think it is that can pull us together? We saw the mobilization of the left in the United States, which was fantastic, what happened with the Congress and the Houses. I'm from Canada, by the way. My name's Tisha, sorry. I really like to know that. That is a passion of mine, is to build the coalitions between LGBTQ and racialized people, marginalized people. We are the majority, and we can have the power. And I just want to know, what is that thing, or those two things, or three things, that can pull us together to fight the right?
I think what has happened in Brazil particularly is that the election of Bolsonaro, and the situation of Brazil is very different from Venezuela because we do have still very democratic institutions in place. The election of Bolsonaro means that a number of certain universal human rights principles and values have been violated. And people were aware, because this man, he was for torture, and being against torture or considering torture a crime against humanity is something that unites a very diverse range of persons. This is a man that defends rape. He has defended rape, not explicitly, but indirectly. He is racist. He's homophobic. These are certain values and principles that should draw a line, a frontier. And this frontier has nothing to do with being more liberal or ultra-liberal or more socialist or less socialist in economics. I believed before the elections that there were certain human rights fundamental principles, and that these principles were not going to be violated as they were. But they were. However, these are the same principles that can help us build larger coalitions against him.
To hear Wings programs again, visit our website, wingsradio.org, or email wings@wings.org. Check facebook.com/wingsradio to see information we share from around the world. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, The Maternal Basis of the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.